Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. Thank you for listening to today's program. Well, finally, a change in fortunes for one of the most notorious hard luck teams in baseball and the end of the most storied jinxes in all of professional sports, the Chicago Cubs, winners of the 2016 World Series. Longtime Cubs fan and best-selling author Rich Cohen captures the story of the team, its players, its crazy days in the Chicago Cubs Story of a Curse, a blend of reporting and a memoir. Rich is the author of the New York Times bestsellers Monsters, Sweet and Low, about the 1985 Chicago Bears, When I Stop Talking, You'll Know I'm Dead with Jerry Weintraub, The Sun and the Moon and the Rolling Stones, co-creator of the HBO series Vinyl, contributing editor at Vanity Fair and Rolling Stone, written for many publications including The New Yorker, The Atlantic, Harper's Magazine, numerous writing awards. Rich Cohen, author of the Chicago Cubs Story of a Curse, with us on This Week in America. Hi, Rich. Welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
This is such a fascinating book, and you start off at age 8. Your dad takes you to a Cubs game, and he makes you promise you'll never be a Cubs fan. He says the Cubs just don't win. You not only became one of the most avid Cubs fans in the country. Once you got there and got hooked, it was hard to walk away from it, wasn't it?
Yeah, because with the Cubs, first of all, after all that losing, if you felt like you'd put in the time, when they finally did win, you were entitled to the biggest party in history. And also, you know, the Cubs were just always such a great team to watch for a kid because they played in the day, so you could always come home from school and they were on TV. And because they, even when they were bad, they always had such great characters, they were always fun to follow.
And you mentioned all of the main characters in the book. The book is called The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. Rich Cohen, the author, and our guest on This Week in America. Your dad said the team will screw up your life. You went through a lot of collapses, a lot of near misses. How badly did it screw up your life?
Well, I mean, it did sort of screw up my life in that I spent so much time waiting for something that seemed like it would never happen.
Yes.
And my father's feeling was that a Cubs fan will just come to expect all human endeavor to end in defeat, will lower his or her expectations and there have less of a life. Now, maybe that's true, you know, but I always thought you lost something as a Cubs fan, but you got something too, which was the game at its purest. I always thought Cubs fans were sort of the Buddhists of the baseball world because we came to live in the here and now and to really appreciate what was going on every day at Wrigley Field because we never had the illusion that there was going to be a postseason or this was going anywhere except into another season where we were waiting for something that was never going to happen.
What was your feeling like last year as you get to the World Series, as you get to Game 7 of the World Series? When did you allow yourself to seriously think, wow, this could be the year?
Not until, well, in a big way, as of 2015, when that new sort of team took the field, I thought this Cubs team is different than the other Cubs teams.
Yes.
And I had faith in the new ownership of Tom Ricketts and Theo Epstein, because Theo Epstein had broken the second longest curse in baseball with the Boston Red Sox. But the deep part of me did not really think this could be the year until Game 7 of the World Series, in between the top and bottom of the 10th inning. And even then, at the very end, it seemed like the Cleveland Indians were rallying and were going to tie up the score again right up until the last out of the seventh game when Chris Bryant, the third baseman, fielded the ball and slipped. And it seemed like he was going to throw the ball away and the game was going to be tied. Because so much of Cubs history, my father would always say, it's not just that you lose, it's that you come so close to winning and then lose. And I'd been through it so many times that just as a Cubs fan, I was just waiting to see, as we say, what form the GOAT would take this year.
The story of the Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse, and let's talk about that. Let's go back to the GOAT. Let's go back to 1945 and what's called the curse. Some will say, eh, it's not a curse. That was a drought. You call it a curse, and it was just the question of when you were going to break it.
Well, you know, the story is that this Greek tavern owner of the Billy Goat Tavern, named after his goat Murphy, brought his goat to Wrigley Field in the 1945 World Series, had tickets for the goat, and even though he had tickets, was kicked out by Phil Wrigley, the owner of the team, and asked why. He said, because your goat smells. And that night put the curse on the Cubs, and when the Cubs lost that World Series in seven games, cursed the Cubs, and then sent a telegram to Phil Wrigley that said, who smells now? and the Cubs never did make it back to the World Series until last year. So though we didn't really believe in a metaphysical, magical curse, we did believe something was going on that prevented the Cubs from winning the big, big prize, and I still think that's true, but I think it was more like a defeatist attitude or kind of a bad culture. And when Theo Epstein came in, he sort of built a brand new team. So by 2015, it was like still wearing the Cubs uniforms and still playing in Wrigley Field, but in a way a team that was a different team that he had developed as very young players in the minor league and then transplanted all at once to the Cubs. Didn't bring those players up one at a time in the traditional way where they could be sort of contaminated by the curse, but got very young players because young people are stupid and don't know about history, and plug them into Wrigley Field, and that's the generation that did it.
That's interesting. When Epstein came over in 2011, he was met by a number, and you referred to him in the book as well, as an outsider. How long did it take to realize, you know, this guy's worked magic before in Boston, he's not from here, but he may have the answers?
Well, I think people felt that, you know, right away, but the thing is you got to remember that Chicago Cubs have always hired these guys who won other places. And they'd bring him in, and they just couldn't do it in Chicago. So there was always some skepticism. You know, they brought in Leo DeRocher, who, you know, one of the Hall of Fame manager who won a World Series with the New York Giants, couldn't do it in Chicago. They brought in Lou Piniella, who'd won with the Yankees all those times. They brought in Dusty Baker. You know, they brought in Larry McPhail as a GM who'd won in Minnesota. They brought in the best people, but when they got to Chicago, something always went wrong. So Theo Epstein seemed different, and I think he was different because he took sort of that it wasn't, the problem wasn't really the team, it was the organization. And the team is just the product of the organization. So he had to fix the organization, and then the team would come out of that. But at first there was hope, but there was a skepticism because we'd been hurt so many times before.
Rich Cohen, our guest on This Week in America, his new book, The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse, available all across the country. You mentioned Wrigley. You talk in the book about P.K. Wrigley, how he traded excellence for beauty. Talk about that and the wisdom of this owner.
Well, you realize that in order to, you know, owning a sports team is just not a good business. Okay, and if you own a professional sports team, you're rich, first of all. And second of all, you got to be doing it because it's fun and because you really are driven to win. And those tend to be the best owners. That's what William Wrigley was, and that's why the Cubs were great when he was an owner. He left the team to his son, and Phil Wrigley, when asked his favorite sport, you'd think he'd say baseball, he owned the Cubs, said craps. I didn't even think craps was a sport.
I didn't okay? either.
No, the guy didn't really care about baseball. He wasn't willing to spend money on baseball, but he did realize that they had to give fans a reason to go out to the stadium, and it wasn't going to be to see great teams. So he decided Wrigley Field itself would be the attraction, not the team, but the field. And to do that, he would make it the most beautiful place in baseball. And that's when he planted the ivy and redid the stadium. And by the time I was a kid, Wrigley Field was beloved, but it was almost like living in a museum, you know. And a lot of people thought it was almost that they had no incentive because they tended to sell out win or lose because people wanted to come and see Wrigley Field. But it was part of a whole mentality which had sort of given up on the idea of winning, that, of course, if you're a fan, you either decide my team's terrible and I'm not going to be a fan of them anymore, or I'm going to find meaning in losing. And that's what becoming a Cubs fan meant. It meant finding meaning in losing year after year, and we kind of fashioned ourselves as kind of better than other fans in that we were more pure, and when you wore a Cubs hat, you were sort of telling the world, my kingdom is not of this world.
In the book, The Chicago Cubs, you talk about a number of reasons, excuses, whatever, given over years for a bad team. And back during the time when they were playing strictly day games, there was this day game wild night theory, and you addressed that in the book. And it's interesting, and was there any validity to this?
I think it was. I mean, there's two issues with the day games. One is, like in 69, you saw it. The Cubs were a great team, but not a deep team. And that meant you had guys like Ferguson Jenkins pitching. You know, they pitched almost 50 more innings as a team, like 500 more innings than the Mets, the team that ultimately passed them. And he was not just doing that, but he was doing that in August, midday, and it just wiped them out. And when they got to the pinch, which is September, they had nothing left. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is all the day games left them free at night, which sent them out carousing, you know, and that was always a challenge, which is Wrigley Field is almost ringed by taverns and bars. And you had guys who would just take a shower, go across the street, and be in the bars. After 69, they had Joe Pepitone, who was famous for this. And there's a great story where Ernie Banks was still with the team. And Ernie Banks said to Pepitone, "Hey, Pepitone, great day for two." Because Pepitone famously said, you know, I mean, "Banks, let's play two today." And Pepitone said, "Yeah, two more hours of sleep." And that really was the Cubs in the 70s.
The book is The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. Rich Cohen, our guest on the program, longtime Cubs fan. Have you actually forgiven Bartman? It seems like the team has moved on. Have you moved on?
I never blame Bartman. You know, I thought that Bartman, that is the fan that reached out and interfered with Moisés Salou making a catch. He just behaved as any fan would, instinctually,
exactly, yes,
reaching for a ball, as I would. And actually, the crazy thing is, if you go back and watch the video of it, other fans did too, but he wasn't the only one. But people focused on Bartman because he looked funny, basically, and he was easy to remember, and then he became the object of the crowd. And that really upset me more than anything else as a Cubs fan, because there's a sickness there, which is the team, didn't change anything. It was a foul ball. It was a strike. You know, and the team then fell apart. And instead of blaming the shortstop who boots the ball instead of turning a double play, or the pitcher who fell apart, they blame the fan. And to me, it was kind of like a self-hate. It was the crowd blaming itself for the curse. And it was just really the lowest point in Cubs history, I think.
What was it like winning the World Series for you as a Cubs fan, for the city, for the team? Did you feel any different after that final out?
I can't speak for everybody, but I felt happy, but also a little sad, you know, a little melancholy.
Yes.
Because being a Cubs fan had always been like being on a road trip that never comes to an end. That's the whole point. You're always waking up and going and never getting there. And suddenly we got there. And the feeling is like, what now? Do we become just like every other team, you know? And you really saw it even with the players, I think, the beginning of this year, which was there was this tremendous hangover because there had been this pressure and this goal and the goals achieved. And, you know, it's like the old thing about the biggest curse you can experience is answered prayers. And last year, our prayers were answered.
With us on the program, Rich Cohen, author of the book, The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. As we're talking, the Cubs are making a run for a second World Series in a row. What's your emotions, your feeling going forward here with the win last year? You're looking forward to this year. What's it feel like? Is it different? What has to be different this year?
Well, it's different in that, for the players, it's different in that they've been there, I think. And there were so many times last year when they almost were eliminated, including Game 7, or when they were down 3-1 in the World Series. So I think the team is resilient in that they're a veteran team now, and they know that you can come back, you know, which is something fans had to learn too. Because in Cubs history, that you don't come back. I mean, you go down and you'd stay down, you know. So that's a big thing. The other thing is, I think I almost thought that we'd be sort of cured of this condition, but I myself am almost more nervous because it's like for the first time we have something to lose. You know,
exactly,
the Cubs,
yes,
are world champions. I don't want to go back to being the second division team. I want to stay world champions. So there's a feeling of somebody who suddenly has money for the first time in his life and doesn't want to lose it and feels a little tight because of that, you know?
Ernie Banks is a really colorful person, Mr. Cub. Talk about him and how important he was to the team during that period when some of the teams were actually terrible teams. He was like the shining player on the squad.
Well, Ernie Banks is probably the greatest player in the history of the Cubs franchise, and that's a franchise with a lot of great players. He won back-to-back MVPs and was kind of a model for the modern power-hitting shortstop. Before him, shortstops were little guys who led off or hit 260 and three home runs or something, and he was a guy who hit in the 300s and would hit 40 home runs. He had more power in his prime in those years than Mickey Mantle or Willie Mays, who were both in the league with him, and he played shortstop. So, but I think he's played an especially important role for the Cubs when they were really bad, which is you had these terrible teams, but there's always one player who you could sort of hitch your hopes to, who stood for really the top drawer in the first class and gave you something to root for in even bad days. And he embraced that role. I always thought, like, being a Cubs fan was like, you know, in the ancient Hebrews wandering around the wilderness trying to get to the promised land, lost in the desert. And Ernie Banks was like Moses. I mean, he led us around the desert. And later on, that role was taken up by guys like Bill Buckner, I felt, played a similar role, and Ryan Sandberg. So he became a model for the perfect Cub and the guy who could give us some pride even when the team was 20 games out of first place.
It's an excellent book, The Chicago Cubs, Story of a Curse. Rich Cohen is the author. The book is available all across the country. Information link on to where the book is sold by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Rich, I enjoyed reading the book and having you on the program. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a lot of fun.
You're welcome. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us. Back after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.